1-800-875-4567.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill.
This is Mitch McConnell when I'm up in the Catskills to go hunt bear and visit my friends in the Greene County Legislature. I always tune into WGXC. I love that weird show, the Nothing Is Real Radio Hour, but it's not on very often. What a bunch of crazy Yankees up there. Where's that station again? Oh, now, remember, it's at 90.7 FM on the dial in my Lexus. I wish we had something like that in Kentucky. Don't forget to vote, y'all.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by Upstate Films, a nonprofit theater connecting the Hudson Valley through transformative cinematic experiences. Presenting The Witching Hour, a series that pays tribute to the special hour of night that welcomes the alluring and terrifying. Featuring in April, Ghost Watch, Noroi the Curse, Lake Mungo, and Be My Cat, a film for Anne. Every Wednesday night, information at upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of John Brigham and Susan Bowell of Holyoke, Massachusetts. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. I'm Amanda.
I'm Jenny.
And we're just messing with our sound real quick, just to make sure we sound loud enough. I think we're okay.
I think so, too. I just turned us up a little bit.
Yeah.
Hit that gain a little.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
And then I'll adjust down here. Perfect. Look at us go.
We are a
radio professionals.
We're a twice a month radio talk movie talk show here on WGXC Acre 90.7 FM every second and fourth Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8 p.m. We pick a theme each episode and then we watch movies separately around that theme and then we get on the airwaves to talk about them together and have a whole lot of fun. But before we get into our theme for this evening, we're going to tell you a little bit about what's playing in the theaters in our broadcast area. I'll start by telling you what's at the Wyndham Theater in Wyndham, New York. We have the Minecraft movie.
Fascinating.
And also A Working Man starring Jason Statham.
I didn't even realize that was A. Yeah.
And Disney's Snow White. You can find out more by going to WyndhamTheater.com. That's WyndhamTheater.com.
Gorgeous. I forgot that there's a Snow White movie, and I was like, is that the old one? That's crazy. Oh, yeah. All right. So now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at Upstate Films, starting with the Star Cinema, which is in Rhinebeck. We have Free for All, The Public Library, His Girl Friday, The Penguin Lessons, Sabbath Queen Close-Up with director Sandy Dupowski, Secret Mall Apartment, The Friend, The Ballad of Wallace Island, and Adaptation. And then heading across the river, to the Orpheum Theater, which is the location in Socrates, we have No Other Land, Disney's Snow White, Misericordia, Her, The Friend, Death of a Unicorn, the 2025 Hudson Valley Puppetry Festival.
Oh.
Warfare, Noroi the Curse, and Rec, R-E-C. And if you're interested in any of those movies or their showtimes, you can find out more information at upstatefilms.org.
Gorgeous. I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Spotlight Theater. That is the 8-screen cinema that's on Fairview Avenue in Hudson, New York. We have The Chosen, Last Supper Part 2, listed first. A Minecraft movie. Death of a Unicorn. The Friend. The Woman in the Yard. A Working Man. The Alto Knights. Snow White. Black Bag. Paddington in Peru. Mickey 17, The Amateur, The Chosen, Last Supper, Part 3, The King of Kings, Warfare, and The Drop. You can find out more by going to spotlighttheater.com and selecting the Hudson location from the drop-down menu.
All right, and now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at TSL this weekend, otherwise known as Time and Space Limited in Hudson. We have Vermilio, Holy Cow, Secret Mall Apartment, The Encampments, No Other Land, and L. And if you're interested in any of those movies or their showtimes, you can find out more information at timeandspace.org.
All right. Last but not least for me, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at Story Screen Cinema, also on Fairview Avenue, but it's the 3-screen theater that's by Healy Boulevard. Now playing, we have Disney's Snow White, a Minecraft movie, and Death of a Unicorn, as well as a bunch of repertory screenings like Batman Forever, Ho-ho! The Mummy, Masters of the Universe, and on Monday, April 21st, a mystery movie. So you can, once again, find out more by going to storyscreenpresents.com.
Wow.
I know.
A lot of stuff to see.
I know.
Pretty thrilling.
I love a repertory screening. I really do. We're very lucky that we're having more and more of them these days.
Truly. I feel like also, you know, we really live in a place where there are a ton of independent movie theaters that play a lot of interesting movies. It's pretty exciting.
I know. And again, like not like these theaters weren't already rescreening older movies, but with the death of David Lynch and screening all of his movies, I feel like there's... Maybe it's just me noticing an uptick in it, but there's been, I feel like, even more.
Yeah, absolutely. It really feels that way, for sure.
Yep.
All right. Do you want... Let's talk about our theme tonight.
Shall we dive right in?
Right in?
All right. So for listeners who might not know, Jenny and I, we don't just have a radio show. We also have a day job.
So
and
crazy.
We are also co-hosts at our day job. And for our day job, we are traveling for work soon, later this month, to the City of Angels, baby, Los Angeles, California, where they make the movies.
It's so true. They really do make the movies there.
And so what did we watch for this episode? But movies about Los Angeles.
LA,
or taking
baby.
Place in Los Angeles.
Yep.
With some kind of... There's many, many a movie that takes place in Los Angeles without having much of a connection to
right.
LA, I feel like. So I tried to focus on movies that
were kind of about LA in a way. I mean, it was such a pleasure to watch movies around this theme because Hollywood is right there.
Yeah.
There are a lot of really, really good movies that are set in or about LA. It's pretty thrilling. I filled in some real gaps in my history.
Yeah.
My movie watching history.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I watched 3 movies and every single one of them was a banger.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm the luckiest person alive.
Yeah. I know.
We should do this every time.
This is such an incredible, so we've done an episode about Florida movies mm-hmm. before. Which, a whole state, not just a city, but
totally.
Like a state with enough of a palpable personality that there are so many good movies, and LA is very similar, and so much so that I thought we'd already done an LA episode because there are so many, just like New York City or New Orleans or any
totally.
Of, like there's so many a movie that does for LA what, Don't Look Now does for Venice.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly correct.
Yeah.
Truly an unbelievably compelling city, it turns out.
A place that Jenny and I have never really spent time in.
Yeah.
And so we're very, very excited. And again, like Florida, New York City, New Orleans is a city that takes pride in its very unique personality, it seems. Obviously, there's not too much I can speak on LA, not being from there. But yeah, I do feel like there's a certain pride in the personality of that city that comes through in these movies.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it feels like such a, you know, Los Angeles is a character in all of these movies.
Yes, exactly.
Like the, you know, it just, it's such a, it's a significant location. And it does feel, you know, we're always talking about all kinds of movies here on this, our movie talk show. Mm-hmm. But it does feel, I mean, it feels like such a significant place for film because that's where they make them. And yep. It's like, it's a huge, it looms large in many movies, even when they're not set there.
Yeah.
It's pretty thrilling.
Yeah, exactly. And because of its movie making history, like LA being very aware of its own vapidness, mm-hmm. kind of, yeah. because it's had such a long history of totally. Movie making and yeah. that being this like key point and problematic feature of it, and to the detriment of the characters in
yeah,
these stories
totally
too.
Oh my god,
all right. Tell me what you watched, Jenny.
Okay. So the first thing that I watched is a movie that I know we've covered on the show before,
but
which was when Amanda was like, we've done LA before, and I was like, no, we talked about this for the Friedkin Freakout. I watched To Live and Die in LA finally.
Yes.
I finally watched To Live and Die in LA.
Yes.
It was incredible.
It's so good.
I loved it. For those of you who maybe didn't listen to our Friedkin episode, it's a movie from 1985 directed by William Friedkin, a director of such notable films as The Exorcist, The French Connection, our personal fave, Sorcerer. Not to assume.
No, it is true.
It's a perfect movie.
It's a perfect movie. It's the best movie.
To Live and Die in L.A. is about a cop played by William Peterson, who I know from Manhunter, but I know he's in other stuff. But that's, I think, the only other thing I've seen him in.
Yeah, I feel like when I watched it for the show, I did not really know it.
You want to say something?
He's on CSI.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Our silent guest says.
We're the silent partner tonight.
He was also on CSI. A show I've frankly never watched.
I know. There's
seen
so many CSI
episode.
Miami, CSI.
I've never seen,
New
I don't
York?
Think, a single episode of CSI.
I only know it from the CSI pinball machine.
Oh, okay. Yes. Sorry, our silent partner, who you maybe didn't hear, said he's familiar with it from the CSI pinball machine.
I know. I wish we had our third mic.
Oh, he's also in Thief, a movie that I've also been meaning to see.
I know.
Horror.
Me too.
This will become relevant later. William Peterson plays a cop who he's like a member of the Secret Service, which is kind of weird because he's acting like a regular cop kind of through this movie. There's a kind of a bizarre. That's the thing that I was like, wait, why are they doing this?
Yeah.
But he.
LA knows it has nasty cops.
It does.
And it loves to put nasty cops in their movies.
To Live and Die in LA is really kind of about how dark the LAPD, I mean, he's not a member of the LAPD, but like how dark
law enforcement
is. Like it's really a nasty film about nasty people.
Yeah.
And like, it is so fun. It's like unbelievably well shot. The entire soundtrack's by Wang Chung. So it's like super good, super fun. Has like an iconic typeface, an iconic typeface movie, like huge.
Yes.
Every time, you know, a title screen comes up, it looks incredible. The font is always changing.
The credits that you just want to post on your Tumblr.
God, you for real. Wow. God, I wish that we were still using Tumblr because this would be all over mine.
I know.
But so, William Peterson plays a Secret Service agent, basically, whose partner is killed in a while investigating a money launderer played by Willem Dafoe.
A very young,
like unbelievably beautiful.
I know. It's
Willem
really,
Dafoe. He looks,
you do see like the softness of his features.
Yes.
I mean, he doesn't really have soft
features. He has harsh features, but like.
You see the elegance of his features
this
age.
He's lit like a Renaissance painting. Like he looks so beautiful.
Yeah.
Like I was so struck by his actually quite feminine beauty in this, which he's otherwise like, you know, he's one of those people who kind of looks like a mummy in a hot way. I absolutely put him in that category of like actors who kind of look like mummies.
Yeah,
like they've been dead for a while.
It's real true.
Yeah. Mads Mikkelsen is my number one.
Anybody
looks like
who's
a mummy.
Got the combo of like a long gaunt face and really high cheekbones with a wide mouth.
Absolutely. And like, yeah, like extremely sharp features, but like unbelievably beautiful.
The giant.
It's happening again. He does. He kind of looks like a mummy too. He's got a beautiful face.
Yeah.
Yeah. For
it's
sure.
True. It's a good call. They're out there. We'll drum up a list.
I gotta get you a microphone, dude.
I know. I can mill about down there.
But I don't want to go into it too deep because we did cover this already in our Friedkin episode. But I knew it was going to be a fun time.
Stepping up to look for a microphone. But
I love this. I love what you're doing.
No, we can actually, it's been a while since we've talked about it. So we can tell them about the overarching plot here.
So Willem Dafoe he's a money launderer, but he's also an artist. Mm-hmm. And his role is really to very beautifully reproduce this money with like an incredible printing operation, which I was very jealous of. Yeah. I was like, God, this looks amazing.
Yeah. Process based artists. You're going to love this one.
Really good stuff. Yeah. So he has a partner who's this woman who's like a performance artist and like they're kind of in a throuple with like another performance artist, which is really fun. Yeah. It has like this weird energy where like the three of them are kind of depicted as like deviants, but in this way that's actually very sweet. Like I was kind of surprised by how sweet it is towards them, where like they're not like it is clearly meant to be like, look at these freaks, but I'm like, no, they love each other. It's kind of nice.
And then by the end, maybe it's not even meant to be so much that like,
yeah,
I just remember, the main the law officer character being so horrible.
He's nasty. He's terrible. I mean, that's a thing that's really interesting about this is that like William Peterson is like kind of meant to be the hero of this movie, or like he's the protagonist, really. Mm-hmm. Like you're following him, but we're given equal time with Willem Dafoe, whose character feels like you really do want him to get away with it, kind of. You're just like, like, come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something really, really intriguing about that. But so William Peterson's partner is killed during he's kind of trying to investigate this money laundering operation and is kind of caught in the wrong place at the wrong time. And then he goes on a rampage, basically trying to hunt down this money launderer and trying to close this loop of this crime, this ongoing crime that's happening. And through this, he's given a new partner who it's kind of this fun idea. It's actually kind of reminded me of Cruising, where it's like the hat feels haunted going from one person to the next, where like William Peterson like kind of passes on his poisons. Dark cop energy onto his new partner, who's otherwise quite sweet.
Like a family man, right? Like he's like a nice guy.
Yeah, he doesn't want to do anything wrong.
Yeah.
But by the end, he turns. Ooh. It's one of those movies where it's like, it's hard to kind of, for me, it's like hard to summarize the plot because it's quite simple. It's just like, this Secret Service agent is on a mission to avenge his partner. And through this, like gets embroiled in this complicated crime ring where Willem Dafoe is laundering money and like providing money to many different people. And there's John Turturro is also involved as like a guy who is basically a fence for the money. Who's like moving it from one person to another. And he's in prison, and like there are all these moving parts to it, but kind of the movie feels like it's primarily about atmosphere to me. Yes. And like the energies of these really dark characters. Yes. Who are
and about LA,
like, which is, I mean, it's,
it has
so
a real sense of place,
huge sense of place. That's what I watched it with my partner, and he was like, are there no asphalt roads in LA? Is it all dirt roads? Is everybody just always driving off?
Are they always driving in the LA River?
It certainly seems that way, for sure. It does. It features an incredible, maybe the best car chase I've ever seen up there. Up there with, frankly, The French Connection also has an incredible car chase. Thank you to William Friedkin.
Yes.
Where William Peterson, who's, honestly, I could not remember his character's name because very early on, his partner, who is killed, calls him a hot dog. And the entire time I was like, his name's hot dog. Yeah. That's his name. I was like, that's hot dog.
Yeah. I know. I can't remember his name.
His name
either.
Is actually Richard Chance. Okay, never in 1 million years. Never in 1 million
sure,
years.
Sure, sure,
sure. Remember
Chance.
That.
All right.
Chance.
Yeah.
He and his new partner basically decide to a try to get Willem Dafoe, like try to get him on the books as a guy who's laundering money by trying to buy some of his fake money from him, trying to buy some of his counterfeit money from him. But in order to get like the police department won't give them the cash to front for it. Mm-hmm. So they decide follow through on a different criminal enterprise and kidnap a guy who is supposedly carrying like $50,000. However, they kidnap this guy who's supposedly carrying $50,000, accidentally get embroiled in this like other insane situation where they're being attacked by they kidnap him from the train station, bring him under an underpass,
it's such a mess.
They start to get shot out from above, and they're like, okay, great. Like, somebody else is trying to kidnap this guy because of all of his money. They take his cash. The man is killed. They go on this insane car chase where, like, suddenly there's 50, 100 people who are all following them who, like, every single turn they take, there's suddenly, like, four guys who jump out of cars with machine guns and start shooting at them. And it's, like...
on the freeway?
It's crazy. Okay. It's such an insane set piece where it's, like, you think that this is just going to be a regular car chase and then suddenly every single person on the road is after them.
Yeah.
Which is really thrilling. And it turns out this counts as a spoiler, I guess, but only in the sense that like this movie is entirely vibes based to me. Like, I don't think it's kind of possible to spoil it except for one thing, which I won't say.
Yeah.
They find out that this guy who they kidnapped thinking he was a criminal was actually an undercover FBI agent. Yep. And so it's like, okay, Oops. Yes, everybody on the earth is after you now. Mm-hmm. And they've really gotten themselves into some deep trouble that it's going to be really hard for them to get out of.
Yep.
So it's just got like these incredible series of set pieces, an unbelievable soundtrack. Like I said, it looks so good. Mm-hmm. It's one of those movies where you're just like, man, they really don't make them like they used to.
They really don't.
And like William Friedkin, as we were watching it, I was like, when are we going to get to the set piece where it feels like somebody should have died? And it's like, it's that car chase. It's so crazy.
I remember when I watched it for the show, I think this was about this movie, listening to a podcast where they were saying, because Friedkin wanted for the freeway car chase scenes a specific mm-hmm. backdrop of the city.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Like blocked off the highway and like everyone's on
the opposite side of the highway. They are driving the wrong way in the chase scene. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're exactly. on the wrong side of the highway. And it is like, oh my God. Like I'm the only way they did things back then was real. Yeah. So it's like,
oh my God.
Like there's so many real scenes where like stunts. People are diving out of the way of this car. And I'm like, I know that you did that for real, yeah. actually. And yeah. it's a miracle that everyone survived.
Oh God, it's so cool. And it just makes it so much better.
But yeah, it was just an incredible, incredible flick. Like really fun, really nasty, like a really nasty movie. It made me feel like, you know, like I was in LA. I was like, we're going to get into there's some really fun scenes with like artists in LA. And I was like, oh, we're going to get into the shady art scene while we're there.
Oh, yeah. yeah, it's got some good sleaze. Like, you know, a high up contender of not necessarily the cat and mouse genre, but the like cops creating criminals
Absolutely.
Creating cops. Like,
yeah,
not
big
quite
time.
The romance of a cat and
no.
mouse.
No, yeah, because there's not like
detective.
Really a...
No, actually, after watching, our silent partner just asked, did we do a fake money episode? And I wrote it down on our themes list.
That's a really
after
good one.
Watching
To Live and Die in LA.
Yeah.
Really
counterfeit
good.
Money.
Really good. We got to save that for later. Yeah. No, we've done a Jewel Heists.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the only like kind of robbery movie theme we've done.
And I'm glad we made it specific because...
Yeah. Money heist is different.
It's totally
different.
You can
heist all kinds of things. Famously.
I know. Art heist?
Yeah. Oh, really good.
I know.
God,
car heist?
Ugh.
I know.
Unbelievable.
I know.
But yeah, that's To Live and Die in LA. I really enjoyed it. It's really, yeah, it was like truly a mood piece in this way that was fascinating. Like lots of great vistas of LA. There's William Peterson is dating is not really the right word. He's like sleeping with this woman and kind of using her for her information. Played by Darlan Flugel. and she lives in this apartment that has like this unbelievable picture window that's like, Josh and I were both like, is that real or is that green screen? It's unclear, but it's like a beautiful view of the city where like she has, I mean, it's not, it's actually not beautiful. It's kind of ugly. It's like a real like vista of industry behind her where you see like lots of smokestacks and like highways. And it's just like, it's an incredible, like it feels very like, oh, that's like, that's a real taste of LA right there through her picture window.
Yep.
But yeah, that's, oh, that was the first movie I watched and I was like, thank God. Thank God I finally watched Live and Die in LA.
It's a real romp, as they might say.
It's a real romp.
All right. Well, I'm going to also go chronologically as to what I watched first, not when these movies came out. Yeah. We watched L.A. Confidential.
Yes.
From 1997.
Amazing.
Starring Kevin Spacey, Russell Crowe, Guy Pearce, and Kim Basinger. It takes place in the early 1950s in L.A. We have Kevin Spacey playing a detective named Jack Vincennes, Russell Crowe playing a, I guess they're all detectives.
Yeah.
I can't remember if some of them are cops, whatever. Russell Crowe playing a hothead detective named Bud White, and Guy Pearce playing a like newly promoted kind of, everyone hates him in the office for being a real brown noser, Ed Exley.
Classic.
Detective. And oh my gosh, I watched this a while ago now. all right. So, we also get, a wonderful Danny DeVito playing Sid Hudgens, who is the writer for a magazine called Hush Hush, which Incredible. Is, kind of like, kind of like a crime gossip mag. Mm-hmm. Like he's paying Kevin Spacey's character to, like, he slips him a little extra money to let him know when he's going to make a bust or to give him tips about when to make a bust so they can get a snap for the cover of this photo. So Detective Vincennes is kind of, they're all their own version of corrupt. Kevin Spacey's kind of corrupt because he is the, consulting officer on a crime TV show, and he loves having that role, and he's also tipping off this gossip columnist. Bud White, Russell Crowe, is, like I said, a real hothead, and the oh my god, the guy who plays Farmer Hoggett and Babe.
oh my god, what is his name?
Come on, Chris,
help us.
I know. What is it?
James Cromwell.
Yeah, yeah. James Cromwell is the boss of the police force, and I can't remember like the names of the titles of everybody, but he uses Russell Crowe as muscle to intimidate mobsters in this like shady motel in, you know, off outside of the city. And yeah, Ed Exley has been, Guy Pearce has been like turning in corrupt cops to like further himself up the ladder. So everyone's got their own thing.
Yeah.
But there has one night a mass murder is found in a diner that included, Bud White's ex-partner who's been fired because of Ed Exley, exposing him for some corrupt actions. And as well as a adult film star who has had plastic surgery to look like a movie star.
Oh, wow.
I also don't want to spoil too much. Mm-hmm. It is a very, like, extremely fun crime drama like, a thick, winding plot.
Oh, love it.
Kim Basinger is plays another one of the adult film stars who worked with the murdered woman who is also... who is she made to look like? Which actress? I can't remember. But anyways, yeah. So like there's a little bit of a love story between Kim Basinger and Russell Crowe. I mean, I don't have too much to say about this one other than it being a real fun romp. And again, like a movie that's having fun with its setting and it being the 50s, like bad cop underbelly, like porno happening in the valley.
Totally.
And where we make movies, like just over there, there's real movie stars like on the lot. But over here,
we're doing our best. It is such, I mean, it's such a genre for nasty cop movies. Like it really is.
Exactly. I know. Again, I don't have too much to say about it, especially because it is a very thick plot, but truly one of those movies that's just solidly entertaining.
God, I gotta watch
solid
it.
Solid gold.
I'm so excited. Oh, so fun.
Yep. With a real twist ending too. Oh,
love. Yes. I mean, that's Hollywood, baby. Mm-hmm. That's the movies. Mm-hmm. I watched a movie that's really about the movies.
Okay.
I watched, this is a recommendation from my mom. Thank you, Jamie.
All right.
For this movie, which is directed by Robert Altman, The Player.
Oh yeah. I've never seen it.
I've never seen The Player. I've seen very few Altman movies, and my mom recommended this, and I was like, all right, I'll throw it on. Great. It's so good.
Yes.
It stars Tim Robbins, if you will.
Tim Robbins. As we've talked about before.
Something that I kind of didn't know about him till watching this movie, because I guess I haven't seen a lot of movies where he's like standing. I don't know. He's 6'5". Just something that I noticed.
Wait, Tim Robbins?
Tim Robbins. I know, it's unbelievable. Tim Robbins is 6'5" tall.
Wow.
6'5" tall.
Wow.
Which I did not realize until... So a thing about this movie that is extremely cool is that it starts with an 8-minute tracking shot of people arriving on a Hollywood lot. And it's unbelievably good. So Tim Robbins plays... I'm going to accidentally call him Tim Robbins at some point.
I know,
I'm sorry about
that. It's such a dumb joke that we love so much.
He plays like a high up movie exec who is essentially like receiving script pitches. And so throughout this movie, he is performing this role of a guy who is like making the big calls in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So the opening of this film is basically like him arriving to work, a couple of other people like leaving, arriving, like the mailboy going around on his little bicycle. There's like random movie stars who show up, like Martin Scorsese's there.
That's so Altman.
It's so Altman. A thing that's so fun about this movie is that there's like 100 celebrity cameos of people playing themselves. And it's part of the fun is being like, is that person playing themselves or are they a character? We just don't know until somebody says something. And it's just so, it's done in such a fun, like joyous way that it doesn't feel like kind of gross and annoying. It just feels charming. But so Tim Robbins is this exec in Hollywood who, starts to receive some threatening postcards in the mail, which are all saying like, I hate your guts. Watch out, you're gonna die. Essentially, it escalates pretty fast. And we are given to believe that this is somebody whose script he rejected through his job. And so, he keeps receiving them. He's like, whatever, this is none of my business. He's driving around in like his brand new Range Rover. He is sleeping with a story editor who works for him. He is like kind of, he's having this rough time at work because there's this new guy in town, played by Peter Gallagher.
Yes.
Who has just come in from Boston, I think. And he's there and is like maybe going to take his job and put him out of business. So like there's this kind of like internal tension. But as he continues to receive these postcards, he's like, all right, it's almost about time for me to start worrying about this, these idle threats that I'm getting. And he does a little bit of research into seeing whose scripts he's rejected, who he hasn't spoken to in the last like couple of months. And he puts together that there's this guy named David Kahane who sent him a script who he never answered. And he's like, I think it might be him because it was about 5 months ago. And he called me a couple times. And he's putting together these pieces that like, it's kind of unclear exactly what he like, he's not a detective.
Yeah.
he's a movie exec.
Making some reaches, making
but
some jumps.
He knows stories. That's his thing. Like he knows how stories are supposed to go. So he goes to visit this writer. Cause he's like, all right, I got to just like nip this in the bud, get this over with, like try to cut this off the past. Like I might lose my job anyway. Like, let me just like get this done. He goes to his house. There's his girlfriend is there, who is played by somebody named Greta Scacchi. Don't know who she is.
No idea.
This is the only thing I've seen her in, I think. He calls on his car phone, or like he has a cellular phone basically, and he calls her outside of the house, like kind of lingering outside the house, and they have like a very sweet like back and forth conversation where they're like clearly hitting it off. They're doing a little bit of wordplay, and she's like, "Oh yeah, my boyfriend, like he actually just went down to the movie theater, so like if you go there, you might see him." And he's like, "Okay." Like she doesn't know that he's right outside the house. Yeah. He's being very creepy. So he goes to the movie theater. And runs into David Kahane there, played by Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
Another very tall man. There's like
very
some
tall.
Incredible scenes where they're standing next to each other. I'm like, they both look normal because they're both really tall. It's like
they're
incredible.
In scale with each other.
Exactly. It was perfect casting. So Tim Robbins, whose character's name is Griffin Mill, confronts David Kahane, played by Vincent D'Onofrio, and is like, hey, man, like, I actually really liked your script and I'm sorry I didn't answer you, like and like kind of pretending like he was always really into it, trying to kind of appease him. But David Kahane sees right through him and he's like, yeah man, screw you, like I'm out of here, you never liked my work, like you don't understand me, man. And he like leaves out of they go to a bar after they see this movie, and that's where they have this confrontation. He goes, I'm like, how much do I tell you? I'm going to tell you.
Just tell me.
I'm just going to tell you about the player.
It's not a new movie. Just tell me the whole thing, man.
You know, who cares? Whatever, man. We're all going to forget.
Hey,
we forget.
What do we say? It's not what happens. It's how it happens.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. So, you know, Tim Robbins is like, all right, whatever, man. I'm just going to go back to my car. As he's walking back to his car, he sees David Kahane, who's like kind of wasted, and he is peeing on the street, mm-hmm. as they say. It's not a euphemism. That's
as
literally what he's doing. And they have another confrontation. He walks David Kahane to his car, like having this argument with him where he's like, hey man, like you don't understand. Like I'm trying to do my best here. David Kahane's like, you don't understand, man. Like you don't understand, man. Like,
no, you.
Yeah. Like they have this huge fight. Tim Robbins kind of like falls into this little stairwell. Like he like trips over himself and like falls over a railing into this little stairwell next to the parking lot where they are, where there's like a puddle, and he like falls and hits his head. Vincent D'Onofrio comes down with him. He's like, oh man, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? He tries to help him up. Tim Robbins freaks out and holds Vincent D'Onofrio underwater in the puddle. They have a big fight and he's really upset and he holds him underwater. And he doesn't make it.
Oh.
And he's like, oh God. Oh God, what have I done? Very bad.
What a twist.
I know people have been asking me about this movie all week, and I'm like, he becomes embroiled in a murder. Yeah, he commits a murder.
Hey, you know what? That's the best way to become embroiled.
Yeah, accidentally do one.
Is do it.
Tim Robbins is like, oh no, and tries to stage the scene essentially as though someone tried to rob Vincent D'Onofrio, David Kahane. And like it became violent and he runs away. The rest of the movie is basically him kind of trying to outrun this, where there's this incredible detective role played by Whoopi Goldberg. Unbelievable.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Who, you know, she comes to ask him some questions. She's like, hey, people say they saw you at a karaoke bar with this guy right before he died. I think you were maybe the last person to see him alive. And he's like, weird. So weird.
That's really weird. I wasn't there.
And there's this really fun kind of... So like kind of the rest of the movie is him trying to outrun this crime and also him trying to keep his job and essentially like produce other movies. And there's this pitch of a movie that comes to him that's essentially about the same story that he's living. And so it has this really fun kind of comic, like so much of this movie is really fun and funny, which is like something that I really enjoyed about it, is that it has a really lighthearted approach to Hollywood and like all of these characters living in LA. Like he's constantly running into actors who are just like hanging out and they're like, hey man, like, did you read my script?
Yes.
it's like
the club scene in Zoolander.
Exactly. And it's got such a fun tone because of that. But then there's also this like kind of interesting thing where he's always talking about other stories which are running parallel to what's literally happening to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course he also ends up spending a lot of time with David Kahane's girlfriend who he talked to on the phone, mm-hmm. and like they are maybe going to start a romance. And like, he knows it's not the right thing to do because he's a guy who knows stories really well, but he still kind of falls into it. And there's this, yeah, there's like this really fun undercurrent running of him, like kind of constantly like pitching and working stories with other people that perfectly reflect what's happening to him. Like he clearly has such a good grasp of like what makes an interesting story.
Yeah.
But then keeps making like the wrong choices in his own
despite
life.
Despite knowing exactly how these things
like,
play
I
out.
I shouldn't be doing this, but I'm doing it anyway. And it's so
fun.
Because
it makes a better movie. He knows what makes a better movie.
He knows what makes a good movie. And yeah, I had a truly a wonderful time watching The Player. It's great. It has like an unbelievable number of actor cameos in it. That's just every single one of them was a delight. I had a great time.
I mean, Altman likes to pack them in there, and also he's a guy who has multiple movies on the LA movie list.
Absolutely, yeah.
One of which I watched today.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I'm excited to find out.
I watched The Long Goodbye.
I know. I was gonna, but I didn't do it, so I can't wait to hear what you think about The Long Goodbye.
It's so good. I had seen the first quarter of it, maybe. Mm-hmm. Early on, didn't finish it because it's has a real soothing tone to it. That's real soothing,
totally
hum that made me fall right asleep all those years ago. exactly. But I did watch it today. Also, another fun like neo noir crime drama.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Know, like we start out with a like another iconic LA movie like Chinatown with a private eye accidentally getting involved in something much bigger and much more dangerous than
classic.
He can really than is really should be on his plate.
Yeah.
But very handsome, sexy Elliot Gould.
God, I love him.
I know. Plays Philip Marlowe, who is a private eye who and also talk about amazing apartments. So he lives in this apartment complex that this movie is funny. I don't know if it's had a more recent restoration. Mm-hmm. I watched it on Tubi today and it's, and I remember from the first time watching it, it's very dark. I think also sometimes Altman is like a real big fan of natural lighting.
Yeah, totally.
And there's a lot of scenes that are hard to see, but including a lot of these apartment scenes, but he lives on the top floor of this apartment building where there's kind of like two towers and like walkways in between.
Mm-hmm.
And he lives in one at one end, and on the opposite of the walkway is this group of girls who are always topless and smoking weed and doing yoga.
Incredible.
And those are his neighbors and they have like a very cute relationship. And he like, it is, it's very much a comedy. He's definitely supposed to be like a cartoonish version of this private eye that we now know so well from movies,
right?
Where he's kind of mumbling to other people, but he's kind of also monologuing to himself. It has a similar energy as like the like Tom Waits spoken word pieces.
Yeah, totally.
Like, where like he's talking to the girls are like, oh, Mr. Marlowe, will you pick us 3 a.m. And they're like, will you get us some brownie mix when you go down to get cat food? And he's like, oh, sure. If I'm by me, I'll get some brownie mix. And like continues to mumble on and
incredible.
Like while he walks away from them. And it's so, I love it. I'm very charmed by the Altman humor.
Yeah, same.
That's kind of like ultra dry and like very much conversation based, or like the snippets that you're picking up that people say.
Totally.
But anyway, so Philip Marlowe, our main character, has a friend who he wakes up at 3 a.m. because his cat is hungry and his cat's meowing him awake. And he also at the same time, once he gets back from the store looking for his cat's food, his friend Terry suddenly shows up. Terry Lennox, who I think like seems to be, he lives in like a fancy apartment building. They've been friends for a long time, but he's maybe a screenwriter or something. Definitely has nicer digs than Phil Marlowe. But Terry is like, hey man, me and my wife, he's got a big black eye. He's like, me and my wife, like we've been fighting again.
Oh no.
Can you drive me to Tijuana?
just real quick. Can you just like take me to Tijuana real quick?
And our good buddy, our very chilled out, dry Philip Marlowe is like, well, Tijuana, all right man. 3 a.m. okay,
yeah, sure man.
The next day some cops show up to his place and say basically reveal to they as the LAPD is wont to do, they basically like shove him into a cop to say that he attacked one of the cops to arrest him. And when he's arrested, he finds out that Terry has been killed or has committed suicide in Mexico, and that his wife that he had the fight with is dead. And they think that Terry killed his wife and then drove down to Mexico and killed himself.
Wow.
And Philip Marlowe says, I don't think my friend Terry would do that.
Just like, I just drove him to Tijuana.
Yeah, exactly. Some mobsters also show up at his apartment. He's kind of now been thrown into again. Like he is a good detective, and he's curious about finding out what actually happened to Terry and Sylvia. But he is also kind of thrown into this because of his proximity to Terry and being the last person to see him alive. Right. Some mobsters show up to his house who tell him that Terry was their money courier. They were he was supposed to bring a suitcase of $330,000 to Mexico City, and it never made it there. And because he was the last one to see Terry, it's now his responsibility.
Oh, no.
So he's really thrown into it. And then he is contacted by a beautiful housewife named, Mrs. Wade. Eileen Wade contacts him to find her husband, Roger Wade, who is I can't remember the actor who plays him, but he's a gigantic alcoholic screenwriter who has disappeared. And they happen to live in the same Malibu housing community that Terry and Sylvia lived in. And again, I don't know how much I want to reveal.
I know
you're going to watch it.
I
know.
I will also probably forget literally everything you
told me. I know. Well, and again,
that's the power.
It is, how interesting is it to hear me tell you all about it too, because it is a neo-noir.
Totally.
And like To Live and Die in LA, it is so much about the texture.
Yeah, absolutely.
And LA being such an expansive city, I feel like movies like this that display the city so well are about the traveling that we're doing to these different areas. Phil Marlowe's apartment complex is such a character in itself, and we do spend so much time there. And then also they're like called like the Malibu, I don't know, the Malibu something, like the Malibu apartments where the Wades live, as well as Terry and Sylvia, are like, they're like fancy and on the beach, but it's, as with Altman, it's always about the characters that you're picking up on the sides.
Yes.
Like the gate agent at the Malibu apartments, his whole thing is doing impressions of movie stars.
Oh my God.
So everybody who comes through, he's like doing an impression to them.
So good.
Ellie Gould's like, oh yeah, uh-huh. Jimmy Stewart. Yeah. The guy's like, all right, you can go through.
All right, go ahead. God, it's so good. That was a thing that's so, I mean, same thing with The Player, where it's like there's a scene kind of early on where Tim Robbins goes to a lunch with some guy that he's trying to wheel and deal with, and he walks past like two other people having a serious conversation, like it's Angelica Houston and John Cusack, and like you very briefly like hear their conversation, and then the camera like pans away from them.
It's so
you can listen to a different conversation. It's just totally random, like just people on the side, and like the camera's still kind of looking at them, but you're listening to somebody else.
It's such
a great device.
It's so good. Yeah, like the mobster in this movie is Marty Augustine is his name, not the actor, the character's name. First of all, one of his muscle guys is a very, very young Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Amazing.
Who's not even credited.
Yeah, totally. He's like, that's a big beefy boy.
Okay, so he's a great, I mean, this is such a comedy. So the Marty Augustine, the gangster, earlier on in the movie does like, when we first meet him, he's like kind of a cartoonish mobster, but then he does something that's like really horrible and violent, and so you take him seriously. But when he shows up again, he's attacked his girlfriend in a previous scene, and in this, when we see him again, he's like, you know, Phil Marlowe's gone to see him to be like, listen, man, I don't have your money. Like, I just want to figure out what happened to my friend.
Yeah.
Also, what's your relationship with the Wades? Because everybody is intertwined here. But Marty Augustine is like, I apologized to my girlfriend after that last time, and so I took off all my clothes and I went to her hospital room so I could show her that I had nothing to hide when I apologized. God. And that's what I want all of us to do. And so everyone takes off their clothes. And yes. Arnold is like flexing his pecs in the background.
Incredible. He's like, I am nude, but
it's so good.
Oh my God.
And yeah, Ellie Gould's like, I'm not taking off my clothes.
I don't really want to do that.
Yeah, it's so, it really, I'm glad, I was really happy to rewatch it because I always wanted to finish it, but also again to really. Like absorb
sit,
what
sit
a,
with it, yeah.
Yeah, what a comedy it really is. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm so like, excited to watch
one
it.
One of the other lackeys of Augustine is this guy whose character's name I think is Harry, who has been ordered to follow Marlo around. But he follows too closely. So Marlo's always like, dude, you gotta
like back up.
You're not gonna be a good hood. You gotta back up.
Like this like, looks really weird.
Yeah.
He's standing right behind
me. Wait till I drive out of here for like a couple minutes and then
so funny.
Yeah, it's really good. I loved it. Again, I think like some Altman movies aren't very good looking.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting doesn't do it favors sometimes. Right. So that's kind of my only thing is like, this is hard to see.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I wonder if there's a restoration of it or something. Yeah,
exactly. And yeah, I'm curious about, you know, I'm curious about if he was a stickler for natural lighting or something like that. But.
Yeah, the player doesn't really have any night scenes or any that are, it's like there's like somebody's in an apartment and somebody's outside.
Yeah.
So there's not like a, you don't need any artificial lighting for it.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm.
I gotta watch more Altman
so
movies.
Good.
I'm so stoked to watch them.
I don't want to tell you. I don't want to tell you anything else.
Yeah, don't tell me anything else. Are you ready for my surprise?
I'm so ready. I'm so excited.
My surprise, my secret.
Yeah.
Last night I watched Heat.
No, I knew it. I knew it. I saw some activity on Letterboxd.
Well, I didn't log it last night because I was like, I can't.
I know you didn't log it, but I saw that you liked some other people's
reviews.
How did
you see? Oh my God. I thought that was sneaky enough.
No, I was looking up. I wasn't even intending to
look
for
that. I can't
believe
you went to the activity tab, a tab I literally never go to.
I'm like so new to Letterboxd. I was just poking around.
Unbelievable.
Okay.
I was being so sneaky.
No, I'm really excited here. I still haven't seen it. We thought about maybe we'd all watch it together.
Here's the thing. I'm ready to watch it again. Last night I was like scrolling. I was trying to decide. I had a couple more movies on my list. I'm trying to watch Set It Off at some point.
Okay.
I'm
not
trying to
familiar.
Watch, we talked about it with Anya once. It's like the Queen Latifah movie. That's got like, it just looks really fun. It's like
it's an ensemble piece.
Is it God, you're so right. It is an ensemble piece. The not so silent partner. I started watching but haven't finished the movie Smiley Face, the Greg Araki movie.
Oh my God, I haven't seen that.
It's one of Anne's
so long.
It's been a wreck from Anne for a long time, and I really loved it. But I did a little bit of extremely legal. You know, a snack where you eat it and then you don't feel like yourself afterwards.
Yeah.
And I had to stop watching it.
Yeah.
I was like, I got to finish this another time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
I know
too real
you
for
had
me.
A, you had a bad snack.
I had a bad snack. And then I said,
bed.
I got to stop watching Smiley Face. I got to go to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's really good. But so I was deciding between finishing that or starting Set It Off or starting something else. And Josh was like, well, you watched like one of the great car chase scenes the other night. And then like we watched like that really great tracking scene last night. So like, do you want to watch one of the best like shootouts ever maybe? And like, do you want to just watch Heat right now? And I was like,
yeah,
you know, at 7 p.m. we have time.
It's
There's
Sunday
time to watch
night,
Heat.
Baby.
There's time to watch Heat. We're watching Heat.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm so excited.
Like you say, like we've said about all of these movies, I'm not going to say too much because it is, and, I mean, and this is a real movie where it's like, it's the experience of it because I knew how it ended.
Yeah.
Like somebody told me how it ended years ago and it's been in my head ever since.
Yeah.
I still cried at the end.
Generally the thing is like, I'm always more interested in hearing about how you felt about a movie than what happened in the movie, because
dude.
I'll see it and I'll figure out what happens.
God.
But
we put it on and I was like, wow, it's a 3-hour movie for those of you who don't know, directed by Michael Mann from 1995, huge vehicle starring Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, both at like the height of their power.
It's also a
Val Kilmer
movie.
God, everyone doing an incredible job in this movie. Like actually a ton of like surprise. We're like, oh there's that guy.
That's
like,
what our friend Jess Viglisi was also just watching it because Val Kilmer's recent passing.
Yes.
And said that it quote had everyone who was alive in the 90s in it.
Like she's right. Ashley Judd is here.
Yes.
Everybody, literally everybody is here. It's Oh, Ted Levine randomly. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Ted Levine.
Yeah. And then you heard like, him open his mouth and you were like, that's Ted Levine. 100%
Ted Levine. It's incredible. Probably many of you already know about it, but if you don't, Robert De Niro plays a con man, a thief named Neil, who's in charge of this crew who are basically like just kind of like turning scores on the streets of LA. All of them are like formerly incarcerated. They're all just trying to like make some cash. Val Kilmer is like his number one gun boy. That's like his role. His name is Christopher, I think.
I was hoping for
something
like something Val. Speedier.
I'm pretty sure it's Chris. I'm pretty sure they call him
Chris. Chris is even that's better.
Yeah, no, they call him Chris. Yeah. The two of them are like part of this crew with a couple of other people, including Tom Sizemore.
Wow, I love Sizemore as well.
Sizemore's great.
Really creepy.
They're really creepy.
He's
not the creepy in this movie. He's just like kind of he's like a family man in this movie, which is kind of a fun role for him.
Wow.
They are part of this crew who are like unbelievably coordinated, unbelievably organized, like stealing stuff, but like with extreme skill. Danny Trejo is also part of their crew. His character's name is Trejo, which I thought was interesting.
Huh.
Like, I was like, oh, they called him Trejo. Does he have another name? It's like, nope, that's just his
name.
Wow. And they slowly come to the attention of Al Pacino, who plays a detective named Vincent. Or I'm sorry, he's a lieutenant. Lieutenant Vincent Hanna. Yeah, I know. It's like he's a lieutenant, I guess. I don't know. He's kind of like
I was saying with LA
he's kind of a cop who doesn't play by the rules.
I was like, I don't know the rankings.
Yeah,
I don't
like,
know
it's
what
none
to
of my
call.
Business. It's simply none of my business.
Police chief.
Exactly.
I don't know.
He's not the police. He's definitely like a detective. Yeah. Like he's not wearing like a cop outfit. He's wearing like cool clothes.
he graduated to getting to wear regular guy clothes.
Exactly. Yeah. So he slowly kind of starts to do this cat and mouse thing with Robert De Niro, where they are playing a little bit of a game with each other. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about it that much because I want you. Yeah, I know you're going to watch it. Like, we're going to watch it before we go.
We're going to watch it in our little apartments.
It's so good. I was enjoying it so much for the entire, like, it's 3 hours long, but it moves at a clip. Like, yes. I paused it almost exactly halfway, which was very proud of myself to make some popcorn. And I was like, we're already halfway. Yeah. Like, this is crazy.
I mean,
it moves so fast. It's like unbelievably compelling. And throughout the entirety of the movie, I was like, this is great. It looks incredible. Like, it looks so good for a movie made in the 90s. Mm. Like, I assume it was shot on film because it just like Michael Mann's thing is like beautiful shots at nighttime and like silhouetting people against like unbelievable backdrops. Like, Robert De Niro lives in this house that's right on the coast, and he has like a massive wall of windows, and there's so many shots of him and like the near, like right before sunrise.
Yeah.
It's really, really dark, but there's like everything's bright blue.
Yeah. There's like a little bit of blue that looks
And it looks incredible. And then I was watching it being like, wow, this is great. Like, this is so compelling. I'm like having an amazing time. All of these like action sequences are so great. And I was like, wow, great movie. And then 20 minutes from the end, I like locked in.
No.
And like a tear came to my eye and never left. Literally, it's so, it's like watching a Greek tragedy. Like, it's so, it's like a sprawling crime drama that is so, it's so unbelievably earned. Like, it's so, I feel like such a dummy talking about this because I'm like, who hasn't already said this about Heat? But like,
no, but like, but now you're saying it about Heat, and that's what matters.
It was,
dude,
incredible. Like, literally, like, there's this scene almost all the way to the end where Robert De Niro is driving with this woman who he has recently met, and kind of like his whole thing is kind of like he refuses to form attachments with people because he's like, at any moment the Heat could be around the corner.
Yeah.
And like, there's, you can't like own things. You can't have people who you care about because like, you're going to have to run at some point. Cause his whole life is like,
has been
dedicated to being a criminal and like trying to basically like make cash, get out. Like, that's his whole role.
Yeah.
But he and this woman like meet each other at a diner. Like, she works at a bookstore where he goes to all the time. And like, they strike up a conversation and they like form this instantaneous relationship that is like, you know, is going to be a problem for him because he can't have attachments.
Oh man.
But there's this scene towards the end of the movie where the two of them are driving in a car together, and like, the way it's shot, there are like, they're driving, it's at night, it's nighttime, and like they're driving and you see the streetlights form these like beautiful halos over their faces a couple of times.
Like, and things that you see with your real human eyes that you thought that you were maybe the, you know what I mean?
Yes.
When somehow in movies they capture things that you thought maybe you were the only one yes. who ever saw,
like, no one's
because
literally
no one's
ever seen
talking
this before.
About it.
And it's like, it's also this turning point of this movie where like things could change one way or the other. And you know that they're going to go one way and you just, there's nothing you can do to stop it.
No,
and like,
I know.